We're about to start. My name is Jakub Hrozek. This is Andreas Schneider, and our talk is about testing complex software in CI. First, a bit more about us. We both work for Red Hat. Andreas works mostly on Samba. He's involved in more projects like libssh or a really nice C testing framework called Simulka. I work mostly on the SSSD authentication daemon. Done a bit of work on free IPA and also help Andreas with his projects.
Okay, do you remember this? So running your application is like playing Tetris. A new tile appearing is like an event in your application, for example, a user input or a network packet coming in. Rotating and placing a tile on Tetris, you could see it as a combination of your algorithms and your software, which is, for example, processing a network packet. In Tetris, if you have a space, it is like a bug in your application. In Tetris, the goal is a line clear and no spaces at all. In your application, it is, for example, correctly processing a network packet. So equally to here, having no spaces at all. So the goal is to play a perfect Tetris game without any spaces, which means you should test your code to be able to play a perfect Tetris game. If you do not do that, something like this would happen, right? Okay, so what is this talk about? Jakub, is it about Tetris?
No, unfortunately not. This talk about improving your tests and making sure that even if you have a complex software that is normally hard to test, and the software does stuff like communication over network or logging in users or owning files by different users, you are still able to test it easily and reliably. When I said complex software, I meant mostly software that, well, nothing like Who Am I or LS that just does one simple thing and prints who you are or prints the files in the directory. I meant more software like system services, stuff that runs as root, or stuff that talks over network to other daemons or to clients, or software that authenticates users. All those programs are really much harder to test unless you want to set up the whole environment with multiple VMs, multiple services, and then maintain the environment. And the software we work on makes testing such software much easier.
Okay, let's take a look at the problems first when testing software. So often not every software offers a test suite, or it only has unit tests on a functional level and doesn't provide any integration tests. So no, you don't have a client running which is tested against your server. Then often it's a problem is that test suites often require machine provisioning, for example, setting up a VM or something like that. Some test suites need a complex network to be able to test. For if you test client and server, normally you need that. And if you have multiple server architecture, you need several servers to test it. And this normally requires a lot of infrastructure and resources and makes it much harder to run the tests. So how do we do testing at Red Hat? At Red Hat, development and testing are separate. So the developer developed their software and the Red Hat quality engineering creates normally tests and only do regression testing. So bugs which customer are reported. And they do these, create these tests either on bare metal or on VMs. So it's complex to set up, it takes a lot of time, and it's not very easy to maintain. So they basically create the environment that our customers would use in production and try to break it with these tests.
So Sandra said that there's a bunch of problems. As you said, the environment is complex to set up, which means that if we develop a patch, we try to fix something and want to make sure that we didn't break something else, it takes hours to just get the test report. If actually something is reported by the test, then it's not easy to get into the test environment and play with the program that is misbehaving, for instance, attach GDB or something like this. And also because this process, this is how testing has been done in the past, it comes too late in the process. We first develop new functionality and only then hand the package over to our colleagues who test it and report bugs, and then we need to go back and forth, and it's just too time consuming. Least but not last, this is not usable by anyone outside Red Hat. These are really internal tests. We want to have those tests in our upstream, so they are usable by anyone. As developers, we want to have really easy way to set up test environment that very closely resembles what our users or customers would run, and be able to play with it, attach debugger, attach Walgreens, and so on. And the projects we work on make that very easy. So what we want to do is we want to run all the tests during development. So every time we hack on some patch, we just want to type a single command in the shell and run all the tests. We want these tests to be as close as possible to what our users would use, which might include stuff like file sharing or user logins, which normally are quite hard to test. And because we are developers and we are lazy, we don't want to maintain any complex test environment. We just want the tools to do everything for us, and we want to do it locally on our machines. So when we were looking into these problems, it turns out that Samba had already figured this out for a long time, and Andreas took the job to opening these Samba internal projects to the larger world.
So Samba already had a pretty awesome test suite, which is called self-test. But Samba needed to compile in a special mode, special libraries, and these libraries got linked into each binary Samba built. So this was only usable in this product in this testing build. It is a really nice thing, but it did not. So this stuff did not require to set up any test machines or network. So everything was tested on the developer machine as with the privileges of the developer. So my goal was when I started this to make it usable for every project out there. So to be able to do the testing which we do at Samba with other projects. And that was the birth of the CREP project. Okay, what is CREP? CREP is a set of tools to create either a fully isolated network and system environment to test client and server components with synthetic account information, with hostname resolution, with privilege separation, and this is done with several libraries which can be preloaded to any executable. Which you can install via RPM. So think of CREP like it is the metrics for applications. So you just heard that CREP consists of several libraries which can be preloaded. Preloading is a feature of the dynamic linker. It is available on most Unix systems. It loads a user-specified shared library before all others, before all other shared libraries which are loaded to run an executable. The library to preload is defined by an environment variable which is called ld underscore preload, and then you specify the library name to load or you specify a path to the shared library. The symbols of the preloaded library are bound first. So the functions from this library are called first. So if this library provides functions from libc and is loaded before libc, then these functions are called first. So CRAP consists of several libraries. So the first one is socket wrapper. Then there is NSS wrapper, UID wrapper, Resolve wrapper, and the newest one we just created this year is PAM wrapper. Okay, let's look at the wrapper in details to understand what they are doing. First, there is socket wrapper, and probably one of the wrappers which most of the people are using because it is really nice to test client-server software with it. Socket wrapper redirects all network communication to happen over Unix sockets. It supports IPv4 and IPv6 sockets and address emulation. And this is completely transparent to the application itself. It doesn't recognize that socket wrapper is there. Well, a really nice feature of socket wrapper is also that you have the ability to capture traffic in PCAP format. So you can inspect what is going on between your client and server. The idea of socket wrapper and the first incarnation was from Hjalmar, who is a Xamarin team member, and he wrote this in 2005. So let's look how socket wrapper works. Sorry. On the right side, this is our server. So I tell the system to preload socket wrapper and specify a directory here, a temporary directory. This is needed because socket wrapper uses Unix sockets. So Unix sockets are a file in a directory. So we specify this Unix socket directory, which is called socket wrapper director. Then we tell it that the default interface is 10. 10 means it's 127.0.0.10. And then we call the netcat command and tell it to listen on this IP address on port 7. As you can see now, we are listening at port 7 is a privileged port. Normally, you need root privileges to bind that port. But as we are using Unix sockets, it's no problem to do that. And as this is all transparent to the application, it doesn't recognize that. On the other side, this is our client now. So here, I also preload socket wrapper and specify the directory, the same directory here for the sockets. Tell the default interface is the 20. Tell it I want to write a PCAP file, start netcat, connect to the server on port 7. As you can see, now I just sent hello world and they both communicated, and it is like a normal network communication. You can do that with every daemon and client, every client and server which is out there. So the next wrapper is NSS wrapper. NSS wrapper provides account information for user and groups. This means you can create artificial users and resolve them in the system. You can look up users, look up groups, create different ones, even root and no group and whatever is in the system. You can also create them on the fly and they will show up when you query them. Socket wrapper, NSS wrapper can also do network name resolutions using a hosts file. So you can map a host name to an IP address you gave in socket wrapper. And the nice thing is NSS wrapper also allows loading and testing of NSS modules at the moment only for user and groups, not for host modules. But this is a feature we want to implement pretty soon. The next one is UID wrapper. UID wrapper allows user switching as a normal user without root privileges. You can start any application and make it believe it is running as root. And we have some special feature in there, so we have support for user and group changing in the local thread using syscalls, which is a special glibc thing, and we also support that. UUID wrapper is also coming out from the Samba tree, but we have completely rewritten it, especially to support the last two features. Okay, here is just a simple example. I'm the user ASN. I called the ID command. As you can see, I'm the user ASN with the UID 1000, group ID 100 for users. If I now LD preload UID wrapper, turn it on and tell it I want to be root and call ID command, you can see that it thinks I'm root. And this allows you to run daemons which require root and need to switch users to do that. And you start them as a normal user, but they think they are running as root.
All right. We also added another wrapper about a year ago or so, which is called Resolve Wrapper. Resolve Wrapper helps with testing of software that deals with DNS and specifically the libc resolver. Because Resolve Wrapper allows to specify your own resolve conf to the application under test. So if you have an application that does some DNS lookups and you have a DNS server that you want the application to talk to, you specify a special resolve conf with the wrapper and the application would talk to your local server without having to modify the system-wide resolve conf. The other thing that Resolve Wrapper can do is that it can completely fake DNS queries and answers just based on text file. So the text file is a very simple key value format. The key is the DNS query, like it can be SRV query, TXT, CNAME, I think that's all. And the value is the answer. And this feature is mostly useful for testing stuff like DNS auto-discovery. For instance, Active Directory has a ton of internal DNS records that clients use to find the Active Directory servers. And using this Resolve Wrapper, you can tell the application under test that there are some DNS records that the application should use just with the text file. And the last wrapper that we wrote a couple of months ago is called PAM Wrapper. So first bit maybe about PAM, because that's not so widely known, I guess, at least not the internals. PAM is the subsystem that authenticates users on Linux. Every software that is able to authenticate you, like SSH or SU, is represented by a PAM service in the PAM subsystem. The PAM service is a text file, and the text file contains PAM modules. PAM then reads the modules from the text file, and each module represents some authentication backend. There is a PAM module for files, like etc password, etc shadow. There is a module for authentication against LDAP, against Samba, Swinbind, and so on, so on. There's many, many modules. The thing about PAM is that it's really, really hard to test without some help. PAM makes it harder to test with kind of several ways. First, the service files like /etc/pam.d/su/sh are typically only writable by root, and there is no way to tell PAM to look elsewhere for the service file. So only what you have on the system can be used. The other thing is that the PAM modules that are under test are initialized by the PAM library in a special way, which, again, is not so easy to simulate. And during the test of either PAM modules like PAM Unix or PAM applications like SSH, we want to these two are kind of different. With the PAM application, we want to make sure that if the PAM module tells from the PAM stack tells the application, okay, this user can log in, then everything works fine and the shell is open and SSH allows you. On the other hand, with the PAM module, you want to make sure that for the expected input, like the correct username and correct password, the PAM module allows the user. And on the other hand, if the user types in wrong password or some non-existent user, then an error is returned and you are correctly denied access. All these are quite hard to test unless you have something like PAM wrapper, because PAM wrapper allows you to load your completely custom PAM service files from location that you control. So you can tell your application to talk to some prepared modules. As part of PAM wrapper, we prepared one module that is very useful for testing. It's called PAM matrix. It's a kind of silly module, only suitable for testing, that authenticates users against the clear text username password database. So very simple to set up. And I think Andreas already uses it to test libssh. Because driving the whole PAM conversation and the login process is quite a lot of code. It's not so easy to set it up. We also wrote a library that is called libpamtest that simplifies writing of PAM tests. I guess I'll show you later. The whole test that tries to authenticate a user with a correct or incorrect password is reduced to just 3 or 4 lines of C code with this library. And this library has a C API because that's the like lowest common denominator. And we also coded up a Python API because that's what many tests are written in. Using all these wrappers together, we can prepare a fake environment for our application without any heavy environment like VMs. The really nice thing is that if you prepare the tests using these fake wrappers, you can really run them everywhere. You can run them on your laptop during development. You can run them in stuff like the hosted GitHub CIs that are very popular these days, like Travis or Semaphore. Usually, sometimes you get through there, sometimes not. And these libraries can provide you with the whole environment or application needs. And you can run your tests on every commit, and they will do all the complex stuff that your application needs to. And now it's time for some demos.
OK, so Samba has something which is called self-test. You can easily run it. All you have to do is call make test. And then it starts to run all our tests we have, about 1,900 test suite. That takes about 3.5 hours. We won't do that here now. You can also select one test suite to run, and it's pretty fast. Because if you develop a feature and there is only one test for it, you want to run that one. But if you want either to write a new test or to debug a test or debug a server, we have something which is called testenv. Here I say make testenv and say tell it what environment I want to have, and I also tell it I'm running here in a screen, so it's tmux. And when I use it, it will set up an environment for me. So here I choose the environment which is called AD member. So what it does first, here as you can see, it is provisioning, sorry. Here we provision an Active Directory domain controller at the moment. This takes some time, and when this is provisioned, then we set up more or less another machine, an AD member, which joins the Active Directory server, and it sets up SMBD, NMBD, and WinBind. And then it gives us a shell you can see here. And this shell is like a client. You can think about it. I set up now 2 virtual machines, one for the AD server, the second for the AD member. And now I have a shell on the second VM. And in this shell, I have a fully working environment now. As you can see, now I used KInit, which is a Kerberos tool. I now got a Kerberos ticket from the Active Directory server as administrator. And as you can see, now I have a ticket granting ticket from the KDC, which is running. And now I can use this ticket to log into the to a Samba network share. And as this is with Kerberos tickets and single sign-on, you can see I'm connected to the server. And I can list the shares. And if I say, who am I? OK, I thought that Jeremy implemented that already. Yes, so here, Samba is a network service. It authenticates users, and it needs to write files as a user. So it requires to run as root normally. So as we are running here with socket wrapper, NSS wrapper, UID wrapper, and stuff like that, it is able to, we are able to start it as root, and it is able to switch to the user I authenticate. And as I'm authenticated as administrator, now I'm logged in here as administrator, and Samba saw that on the file system or on the system, it switched to that user. And this is all possible with CRAP. So I have just one command I need to execute, and I get in a fully working environment. Normally, I need to set up at least two virtual machines and configure them. And that's done here just with one command. And a few seconds later, it is set up. It makes it really, really simple for a developer either to write a test, to debug a test, or to run a test. So it, as easier it is to run the test, the more likely it is that a developer or a new developer will also run the test.
This is too tight for the laptop, so I'll be a bit on the side. So this is a test we have in SSSD that actually tests the PAM SSS, the PAM SSS PAM module. The PAM SSS module does some pretty complex stuff. I chose tests that, as you can see from the name, it tests PAM authentication using one-time password. Obviously, during tests that I want to run on my machine, I don't have any RSA token or Google Authenticator to generate OTPs. So I need to fake the whole conversation with PAM wrapper. And what PAM wrapper allows me to do is use just these two lines of C code. The first line says, I want to run a PAM test case that will authenticate the user, and I expect that test to return success. The other is a special libpam command that returns the whole PAM environment, so we can see what the PAM module under test set or did not set. And I also expect it to succeed. The test then prepares a PAM service file for the PAM SSS module, which is called test PAM SSS, and also is able to add more options to the module. This would normally require me to write as root to the etc pamd directory. And as a last step, I call a function of our libpamtest library called runpamtest. I specify the service name that I created earlier. I log in as an user code, user called OTP user. And in this structure called conversation data, I have a password and a one-time token that the mock backend that is simulating the SSSD running knows that, okay, this is the valid combination for the test. And what it does, it really executes the PAM module, and the PAM module returns a success just like, or runs the same code it would as if I actually had the RSA token and did the whole PAM conversation from the command line. That this is completely automated and doesn't require any privileges. Maybe I can show you the other thing. We have something like Samba test and in SSSD. It's not as nice, but I can run tests. And in this test, I inserted a breakpoint. We have function that is able to pause the tests at some point. And when the breakpoint is executed, it starts a screen also. So there is a C rep session. Oops. I can attach to it. And now again, I'm, thanks. Now again, I'm in a simulated environment where an LDAP server is running. And SSSD is able to talk to this LDAP server. Just setting up the system so that it's able to resolve a user like this from an LDAP server and display this information requires normally root. And just running SSSD, I can show you the SSSD processes that are running. Can you, Mike? So these are the SSSD processes that are running on my system. The first one is actually the one under test. It's being executed as my UID. So this is UID of my user on the system. But as you can see, the test thinks that we are root. And the processes think they are running under root. The second SSSD BE process is actually the one that I'm normally using on the laptop to authenticate myself. So again, completely synthetic environment that tests stuff that normally is only possible with root and VMs and so on. I think that's it for demos.
Okay, so who uses CRAP at the moment? The biggest user is Samba. Then comes SSSD in libssh. I implemented it to run client tests against an open SSH server. Docker and OpenStack use NSS wrapper to support arbitrary users. There is a problem when they provision the environment, and I think some daemons to that they can start them need some users already in the system, but they don't exist yet. And for that, they need NSS wrapper to fake that they exist. Then we know that not DNS is using CRAP to test their DNS server. Not DNS is used by the check root domain server. And then mod auth GSS API for Apache is using socket wrapper and NSS wrapper to test their module. Then GSS proxy, which is privilege separation for Kerberos credential caches, is using it. PAM wrapper is used by PAM HBAC mostly at the moment, and also PAM SSS. And the Open Connect VPN server is also using it for several tests. Okay, if you are interested in CRAP, there is a website which is called crap.org. We have a mailing list for discussions, which is the Samba technical mailing list, because a lot of Samba developers contribute the code and know this stuff also very well. And we have an IRC channel on Freenode, where if you have questions, then you can find us there. Okay, and that's the end. So do you have any questions? Say it loud.
Test, yes, hello. Yes. So can you simulate latency and packet loss using the network wrapper? Or am I thinking incorrectly about that? Or is that something that could be added?
The question was about if we can simulate packet latency and stuff like that. No, we don't have something like in there to inject delays. I'm not sure if we want that. So the thing is, what you can sometimes do is, as soon as you unset the socket wrapper dir, variable, all the network connections are more or less gone because it doesn't find the Unix sockets. That's something you can do, but we don't have anything else, and we never needed something like that till now.
And I guess in the same vein, can you simulate DNS lookup failure or problems like that?
Well, what do you mean with simulate DNS lookups?
Yeah, so for the DNS wrapper, say that this lookup should fail and this should succeed and give different return.
No.
But this should be possible to implement. It's just not implemented yet. So ask on the mailing list and maybe we can we can do that or send a patch.
So what we are able. So we can. What Resolve Wrapper is able to do is you can create a fake DNS server by just writing a simple file. And then it will serve all the queries from there. Resolve Wrapper is only for functions which come from libresolve. For example, libcurb5, the Kerberos library, does service discovery using SRV record lookups to find a KDC, and Resolve Wrapper is there to solve that, that it is able to find that. Other DNS queries, like if you lose get and hosts, something like that, that is going through NSS wrapper, because NSS wrapper has a hosts file support. But we want to change that. We want to also support NSS host modules and implement a NSS hosts module, which then loads Resolve Wrapper, and this way you can really go to a DNS server you specify or fake everything.
Right, thanks.
Yep, hi. Maybe just a similar question this. So do you have any fault injection, so in general, implementation in that suite up?
We don't have any code injection.
Yeah, maybe that would be better, perhaps. When I compare with the normal sandboxing with a namespace, then I think one thing missing is UDS. So, for example, unshare command can just easily change the host name and so on, or time zone. That's all. UDS things can be also implemented maybe easily in that sphere up.
So changing the hostname is possible by just setting an environment variable, which is called NSS wrapper hostname.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. In NSS it's possible. Yeah.
Because it's also a glibc call, get hostname normally, and call is wrapped. And if you have it set, then it will return what is in the environment variable.
Yeah. And another question is, it is LD preload, so you cannot check the program that manages as well, so plays with LD preload itself, right? Or can we somehow overcome? So the program that sets the LD preload by itself, then I think it's not easy to overcome.
Yeah. But which application sets LD preload by itself? I mean, the thing is, one problem, for example, is if an executable has the SUID bit set, then LD preload is not allowed.
LD preload is just via environment variable, so
yeah.
It can be easily overwritten.
But if the executable already started and then sets the environment variable, then it will only then LD preload, then the libraries are already loaded and you cannot preload.
Well, you showed that, that question is if the test is only one process or just a fork.
Yeah.
So if the process itself forks and
yes.
Before that it resets the LD preload or override, just writing by,
yes.
By its value, then it might not work.
Yeah, but then the application should probably read the variable first and then.
So LD preload has a syntax that can just concatenate the whole different files. So the application should be fixed to do that. Yeah. And okay, just one comment I think the really good in this CRAP is that it can be run just by user space, so user privilege without any root privilege. That's the biggest, well, I think, difference from the.
The other thing is that I think the namespaces are Linux only thing, right?
Right.
And this is portable.
Yeah.
So this, we test all the wrappers on FreeBSD, on Solaris. Most of them work on OS X. It depends on what feature set is available on the platform, but if it is available, then we normally are able to run. So
yeah.
This works on a socket wrapper, at least works on FreeBSD, OpenBSD, Solaris, and OS X.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, thank you.
And really, the thing is, what's important for us, we want to make it as easy as possible to run a test, because that's the way how you can encourage developers and also new developers joining your project to actually execute the tests. If it's hard, if you have two pages to set up the test environment and someone just wants to send in a small patch, they won't do that. But if you just tell them, well, call make test and it runs, and if it succeeds, we know your patch is fine.
Hi. Do you do any system call interruption and basically fake system calls?
We also emulate some system calls, especially for a UID wrapper is doing that, because you have the system calls for set RE UID, set RES UID, and we need especially to wrap these ones to just set to switch a UID for a local thread, at least on Linux with glibc. So in there we are able to simulate it. And also we have in the socket wrapper, there is one IO control which we wrap to read remaining bytes on a socket. And I FNCTL, I think two, I'm not sure.
Another question. How is Samba using CRAP exactly? Is Samba torture using it? Is it just testing the Samba server and the client using CRAP? Or did you use Samba torture? Or are there any advantages, disadvantages to it?
So Samba has several tests. So we use it to do integration tests, which means we have a binary which is called SMB torture. SMB torture more or less implements all the protocol behavior. And we run this against either an Active Directory server, a Samba file server, and stuff like that. And all of this environment is set up using CRAP.
OK, so you're using Samba torture. In
yes.
part.
And also, I mean, there are also Python scripts which do tests against the Samba servers or Active Directory. There are shell scripts which run tests or binaries.
All of this, you said, in one VM, for example. Like, you don't use multiple ones. You just use a server client on the same machine.
Yes. So I can, I think. As you can see here, this is Active Directory running, which is also starting WinBind, and this is the AD member, which starts WinBind to authenticate user against AD, and a file server which you can connect to the shares. And when I execute SMB client here, I'm more or less on the ID member, which is these processes. I'm here, and I'm connecting from here to the Active Directory server, which are these processes. But they are running all on the same host on my machine as my user. So if I print it, if I print it out, then you can see it's running as ASN. That's me.
Okay, thank you.
All each process.
Thank you.
Okay. That's it. Thank you very much for listening.